Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chaim Schmidt from the Culture Scene. You can see our blog at culturescene.wordpress.com. My guest this evening is Chaya Rivka Zwolinski. She's an editor, writer, holistic nutrition teacher and coach, photographer, ghostwriter, and blogger, of course. Basically, she has led a fascinating life, and best of all, like the rest of us, she's a foodie. But
that's right.
With a twist. Good evening, Chaya Rivka.
Good evening, Chaim. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. We'd like to hear a little bit about how you got into this. I mean, let's face it, the Jewish diet is not known for being the healthiest diet in the world.
That's right.
In fact, if your parents are from Eastern Europe, then, you know, schmaltz was, you know, the main ingredient, let's face it.
I don't know about your
generation, but in my generation, Gribenes was a special treat. Today, any doctor will tell you that Gribenes, that's a triple bypass on a plate.
That's right. I have news for you. I think Gribenes is not as unhealthy as they say it is.
Okay. I'd like to hear that.
Okay.
I still remember the aroma of Gribenes as I used to walk into my house after Cheder or after Mesifta.
I was a little girl, my grandmother used to put schmaltz on rye bread, and that was a treat for me.
That's correct. I remember that, too. I also went through that.
That's right.
Today, any doctor will tell you, are you mind? How could you?
Well, I think the doctors are wrong. I think they're wrong about the schmaltz. I think they're wrong about the Gribenes. But I think they're right about the rye bread, unfortunately. I got into this many years ago when I was a little girl. I had a pet goose named Irving. And I was about 9 years old. And one day I came home, and there was a giant turkey roasting, a roasted turkey on the table. And I learned that that was Irving. My father had taken him to be shechted. And that really got me thinking about food, about life, about death, and about eating. And I didn't know what vegetarianism was, but I had an instinctual revulsion, and I decided I didn't want to eat meat anymore. And I spent many years...
Did you ever recover from that revulsion, or are you still a vegetarian?
Nope, I'm not a vegetarian now. I believe that eating meat is not only healthy, not all the time, but it's certainly healthy on Shabbos and holidays.
Mm-hmm.
But eating meat is essential for a Jew because the brachas, the blessings that we make on meat, and the intention we have when we're eating meat is part of the rectification process of the world. This is part of the teachings embedded in Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, that the intention with which you eat is as important as what you eat, maybe even more important than what you eat.
So how did you get into Breslov Hasidus? I assume that that's not what you were born into.
That's correct. I was born into your typical non-observant Jewish family, and I always wanted answers. I was always looking for answers. I knew there had to be a meaning to life. And I wasn't being told the meaning to life in the conservative Hebrew school I was going to. In fact, they were boring me stiff. And I felt that if all these human beings were here on the planet, it couldn't be by accident. And I began a very long search. It took me 38 years to learn about Torah Judaism, believe it or not. And when I did, I had an instant, immediate recognition that this was the truth. And I decided within 24 hours that I wanted to be not a halfway Jew. I wanted to be a fully observant Jew. I wanted to understand the Torah. And I wanted to connect with Hashem, to connect with God in the way God wanted me to connect with Him. And I began studying with Chabad. And little by little, over the years, I became more and more moved by the teachings of Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, and Baruch Hashem, my husband also. And so
Your husband also did not start out then as a Breslover.
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay.
So that's how we ended up. We both are very interested in spiritual health, mental health, and physical health, and eating right goes along with that. And a lot of Balei Tshuvas and a lot of people in Breslov do seem to be very concerned with eating right, because Rabbi Nachman spoke about the importance of not being a glutton, eating with appreciation for the food that Hashem gave you, and reserving the joy and delight in food for Shabbos and the holidays, and to eat for health, for spiritual health and physical health. And this dovetail, this completely made sense to me, because I'd spent my life so interested in food. I wrote about food. I studied nutrition. I was so interested in helping people heal through their diet. And I think a lot of Jews, religious and non-religious, it doesn't matter, are very interested in food. And I think this comes from inside us. We have a little spark that realizes, even subconsciously, that kosher food, that saying a blessing over food, all this is what we are meant to be doing. And we search for it in the strangest ways. We search for it in macrobiotic diets or vegetarian diets.
That diet was developed by somebody who is now a Chabad Chosid, Meir Abercera, while he was a student in France.
That's right. He was one of the students of the whole macrobiotic scene. And he actually, I believe, moved a bit beyond that, because macrobiotics itself as a philosophy is antithetical in many ways to Torah. It's not just a diet, it's a philosophy, and there's some good things in it, and then there's some things that are not so good in it. For example, There's a very Eastern sense of nothingness, unity in nothingness. And, of course, Jews, we don't believe in nothingness. We believe everything is Hashem.
That's correct.
Yes. So that's a little bit about how I got into it.
Now, on your blog, on the About page, you tell a story that you were a rebel. You were not quite into health food. Yet, at the age of 24, you discovered it. Want to tell us about it?
Sure. I was raised with a very health-conscious mother, and I rebelled, naturally. And I began to eat whatever I felt like, whenever I felt like it. And this often involved sometimes going without food because I felt too busy with my life to even eat. And I developed an ulcer. I was at that point in the theater. I was watching a play, and I had waves of pain come over me, and it was so bad I fell off. I literally slid off the seat, and I went to the emergency room, and they sent me to a specialist, and he said, "You have an ulcer." He wanted to give me medicine. He threatened surgery. That is when I discovered Michael Abuchadzera's book at the time and the East-West Foundation in Macrobiotics, I immediately took their advice. I went on a brown rice fast for several days, and my symptoms completely disappeared.
Wow.
And I went back to the doctor, and he said, it's impossible. It's just not possible. But whatever you're doing, keep it up. And I kept it up, and I began to explore. That got me really interested in nutrition. And I began to study. I studied all over the world with a variety of people, a variety of nutritional philosophies, nutritional approaches. I studied cooking. I studied raw food. I studied Ayurvedic approach, traditional Chinese medicine. And everything had something missing, because by the time you got through with everything, you still saw that there were people who were, okay, maybe they were a little healthier, but they were unhappy. And they were angry, and they were frustrated, and if you didn't agree with them, it was intolerable to be questioned. And I knew that this couldn't be, all these different kinds of nutrition couldn't be the answer. And I began to realize that this must be deeper than just what you're putting into your mouth. It must be...
Mm-hmm.
Spiritual nutrition, that was the issue.
Now, let's talk a little bit about spiritual nutrition.
Okay.
You said you tried Chabad. I'm sure that must have answered some questions, and obviously not all of them, or you
right.
would have stayed there.
Right.
But it must have answered enough questions to get you attracted to Yiddishkeit, to becoming Orthodox. In a way, from conservatism.
Well, I wasn't conservative, by the way. I was raised conservative, and I abandoned it. So I was really nothing.
Ah, you went even further away.
Yes.
Okay. So, of all things, what first attracted you towards Judaism in general? Why did you decide if you could do anything you wanted? Why suddenly abandon everything and look for something that would give you all types of no-nos?
Because I didn't see it that way. You see, I had tried everything. I had looked into all kinds of answers in all kinds of disciplines, from martial arts to art, to various studies I did in college, to all kinds of things, to nutrition. Nobody had a complete answer, and the people that I met who said they had the answers, they always had a glaring flaw, and a flaw that was intolerable to me, a flaw such as immorality, or they were dishonest, and they weren't living up to their spiel, their hype. So I said, you know, I've looked at everything. I know conservative Judaism is very dry. It's empty. It's a husk. It's a shell. Let me look at you know, Reform and Reconstructionists and all this, and that also immediately just pushed my buttons. And somebody said, why don't you go to Chabad? And I was very afraid. I went to a Chabad house. I spoke to the rabbi and his wife for 2 hours, and I realized that, number one, their marriage was a mission greater than the sum of the parts. It was
Greater than another one of them.
That was just impressive to me. And the next thing was they listened. They were the first people who ever took my deep questions seriously enough to listen and to tell me that these questions were natural and that maybe I wouldn't have all the answers right away, but perhaps if I looked into Torah and Hasidus, I would find some answers. And I was so stunned by just the quality of their silence and their ability to take me seriously as a soul, not as a flesh and blood, but as a soul. I don't know that this happens to everybody this way, but I immediately knew I knew it was the truth. So that's
From there, how did you evolve into Breslov Hasidus?
Okay. I had always been, okay, at the time, I had read some Breslov books, and I was attracted to it, but there were no Breslov houses. There were Chabad houses. So I wasn't exposed to Breslovers. I got married. I moved to Borough Park, New York, in Brooklyn, and my husband learned Breslov. And he learned Breslov, and we didn't necessarily associate with the Breslov group, but he kept telling me that Breslov would have the Rebbe would have the answers to my deepest questions. Finally, I read The Garden of Emunah, and the simplest little book, and I said, that's it. Now I have to read the Rebbe directly. That was Rav Arush's Garden of Emunah. And I began to read everything from Breslov Research Institute in English. They've translated so much. And I even began to write for Breslov Research Institute at breslov.org. I write a blog there.
Write their blog called the Breslov Repair Kit.
Right, right. Sporadically, I'm busy, but I would like to write more. And I teach Breslov Hasidus to various women now. And I just feel, you know, the Rebbe always said that the Rebbe spoke to me in so many ways, and one of the things is that he said he recognized the importance of what we put into our bodies, how we speak, and the fact that the mouth was such an important part of who we were. Because it's what we take in, it's what we give out. And this really resonated with me from the spiritual nutrition standpoint. And I know, of course, you could read the Chafetz Chaim also, who speaks about this. And also Hespodidus, which also the Chafetz Chaim encouraged very much as far.
Right, but it's from a completely different perspective.
True. That's true.
Both ways may lead to the same destination, but they do not universally appeal to everyone, so it's a question of choices.
That's right. That's right. And I happen to, I happen to read very broadly, and I like to be informed. I feel my whole life I missed out so much of Yiddishkeit that I have to keep myself massively informed. And I don't want to reject anything. I just want to learn what's ever valid and true.
Now, I've been looking at some of your writings, and you have some very, very interesting turns of phrase. For example, in your About page, and I quoted it on the post about this radio show, you said that at the age of 24, after you developed an ulcer, you did an elaborate Apache tango. Being a South American myself, I'm quite familiar with the tango. And yes, I can see. Having seen enough Westerners, I know what an Apache war dance would be like. I can just see it perfectly as an Apache tango.
That's right.
Although normally I never would have associated the two.
That's right. I you know, there was a movement in France in the 1950s, a very, very dark movement, the Beatnik movement. And, I mean, it was all over, but it was France especially. And
hello? 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 I seem to have lost the signal. Hello?
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Okay.
Can you hear me? You can hear me?
Yes. I can hear you perfectly now.
Oh, good. I don't know what happened.
Okay. Unfortunately, 30 minutes finishes in 4.5 minutes, but anyway, we'll continue talking and then I'm going to re-edit. All right. you were talking about the seven...
I was talking about the seven rules of mindful eating.
Right. I want to hear that, please, because I do not know if it was recorded or not.
Okay. So basically, if you go to my blog, healthyjewishcooking.com, one of the pages I have that I feel is very important is the seven rules of mindful eating. And basically, they're rules, they're loose rules about how to eat without worrying necessarily about calories, nutrition, but how to eat with more mindfulness so that you end up eating in a healthier manner, both spiritually and physically. And I'll just go through the rules briefly if you'd like me to.
Please.
Okay. The first rule is choose. And most people, believe it or not, don't really choose what they eat. They let their cravings decide for them. So making the choice with your brain is a really good beginning. You're going to try to choose foods that are maybe healthy or healthier. And that's a good first step. And then the next of the seven rules is to sit. A lot of people eat when they're talking on their phone, when they're, you know, taking care of their children, when they're walking. It's very important to sit. Judaism teaches a person should be concerned with personal dignity. And sitting and eating is dignified, and it also helps your digestion. The third rule is commit. And that means that you should put enough food on your plate to satisfy your hunger without overloading or underloading your plate. So you're going to commit to that portion. You're not going to take seconds. And even if the portion is huge,
sometimes the food is absolutely delicious. How can you not take seconds?
Okay. Shabbos, Yontif, when your mom's cooking something for you. Okay. But these rules aren't set in stone. What they are is to get you thinking about how you eat. So obviously there's flexibility. Baruch Hashem, right. The next one is acknowledge. And this is the most important one. And that means to say a bracha, a blessing over your food or drink. You have to acknowledge the source of the food, that Hashem, that God created it to sustain you. Non-Jews also have to acknowledge the source of their food. It's very, very important, because otherwise it's like you're a thief. You're just taking. It's very important to appreciate that Hashem is sustaining you. The next rule is to pace yourself, which is to eat at a medium slow pace, to put your fork down in between bites, to not bow your head towards the food, to not turn the food into an avodah zarah, to be slow and dignified. And the next one is to chew and to breathe. Chewing your food, digestion begins in the mouth, so it's extremely important to chew your food well. Saliva has enzymes in it which begin the digestion process. Your teeth grind up the food, which helps it pass through your system. And so it's very important to chew, and you need to breathe in between. And I think in the Shulchan Aruch it says, my husband always tells me, don't talk while you're eating. He says that it's in the Shulchan Aruch. Then,
yes, my mother apparently knew the Shulchan Aruch very, very well.
That's right. A Jewish mama knows the Shulchan Aruch, of course. Oh, that's cute. And then finally, the seventh one is also very important. That's complete. And that's to stop. We need to stop eating. It's hard for some of us because food is delicious and we want to keep eating. Uh-huh. But it's important to stop, to acknowledge Hashem, to say thank you, and give yourself a chance for your brain to get that message of fullness, because it takes actually about 20 minutes after eating before your stomach sends that message to the brain. So you don't even realize that you're full. And so that would be the final rule. And then the, I guess there's an additional rule from Rabbi Nachman, which is just a delightful rule, which is that the oneg of eating on Shabbos, the delight of eating on Shabbos and Yom Tov, is higher spiritually than fasting all week long. And I love that rule.
Yes, absolutely. I can see that.
So, anyway, those are the rules.
Okay, now, going through your blog, going through your pages on breastlove.org,
uh-huh.
It is quite obvious that feeding the body is not enough. Your philosophy demands a feeding of the spirit of the neshama as well.
Right.
It's not always easy. In fact,
right.
Most food writers concentrate on feeding the body, and yeah, they pay lip service to being firm, but from there to go and feed the soul, wait a minute, that's usually a problem.
Right.
How did you overcome the natural opposition to feeding both?
Well, okay, we do have to feed both. We have to be realistic, and children also, you know, they need treats, and the mother's busy, and I mean, this is realistic. However, when I first moved to the religious community of Borough Park, where I had never stepped foot before until I moved here,
mm-hmm.
and I went into a grocery store, and there were three aisles, and one aisle was filled with junk food, with nash. And there were kosher versions of every single kind of toxic, unhealthy, 27 kinds of candy, 30 kinds of chips, and then right at the cash register, rows and rows of candies and snacks right at child eye level.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And it struck me, not that I'm against children having a treat or having a party or whatever, but it struck me that we have taken the very worst of the secular food world and imported it into the Jewish world. The worst meaning this, there's no holds barred, there's no restraint whatsoever. And I'm not an ascetic by any means. I love delicious food, and I'm very happy that Hashem, you know, I'm very happy I learned how to cook, and I'm very happy Hashem makes so many beautiful foods. But this is over the top. It's over the edge. And we see so many sicknesses in the Jewish world and in the religious world that I believe are directly linked to food. A lot of problems. People think it's gluten intolerance, but it's a combination of things. All kinds of bad diseases, skin problems, attention deficit disorders, emotional problems, addictions, stomach, a lot of digestive complaints, bloating, cellulitis. All these things are created when your body is filled with toxic foods. And your immune system isn't strong enough to necessarily fight off these things themselves. And it's very disturbing to me because people would rather take a vitamin, take a supplement, take a medication than change the way they eat until it gets so bad that they have no choice. And I think that moderation in all things, including moderation in eating right. You can't be an ascetic in this world. You don't want to be deprived, and you don't want to deprive your family. But at the same time, we have to understand that we don't live to eat. We eat to have the strength to do mitzvahs and to serve Hashem. And I think a lot of people have forgotten that.
Yes, there is a famous Hasidic story. It's one of the early Chabadske Rebbes. He called his driver, Ivan, and he asked him, "Why do you eat?" So he says, "Because I enjoy it."
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He called his shamus, and he says, "Why do you eat?" "Because I need the strength to serve Hashem." And he gave a krechts. Why did he give a krechts? Because after all, we are human.
Uh-huh.
And even though we know we're supposed to do everything for Hashem's sake, being humans, quite often, we forget that.
That's right.
And a Jew recognizes it.
That's right. That's a beautiful mashal. Yes. Yes. And we do. I mean, we're human. And we can't be hard on ourselves. And we can't be depressed.
Right.
We have to keep going forward. Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that story. So, anyway. So
now,
I guess,
do you have any interesting or amusing stories of your life journey?
I have many interesting and amusing stories of my life journey. I have traveled a lot, and I think that I'll tell you a funny story. I was living in Ithaca, New York, near Cornell University,
mm-hmm. Right.
Which is where I became, where I learned about Torah Judaism, and I koshered my kitchen, and I went to, there's a big, beautiful lake in Ithaca, Cayuga Lake,
mm-hmm.
And I went down to the river in the middle of the fall, in like fishing hip waders, rubber hip waders over skirts, to toivel all my new kitchen things that I got.
Wow.
And I schlepped them down to the lake, and a man jogged by. He was jogging. And he had on a Free Palestine baseball cap on his head. And he said to me, "Ooh, what are you doing? Why are you dipping your dishes and your pots or whatever into the lake?" And I said, "It's a very ancient tradition. I am ritually purifying these foods to sit on my table because my table is a place of spirituality and holiness." And he looked at me and he said, "Is that something Native American?" I said, "No." He said, "Are you a, I don't want to say the name, but are you an Eastern religion advocate?"
Right.
I said, "No." And he said, "What is it?" And I said, "It's Jewish." And his jaw dropped. I've never seen anybody looking more nonplussed. And he turned beet red. And he walked away.
That means he obviously must have been Jewish himself, but he hated himself so much he couldn't admit it.
Very possibly.
And a Jew would not have cared so much.
Very possibly. So that's one of my little anecdotes in my travels and my life. And, you know, most of my anecdotes involve my mistakes, not other people's. So I don't know how much I want to share.
We'd like to hear some of those, too.
I've made a lot of errors of understanding. You know, when you become shomer mitzvahs, when you start to take on mitzvahs and you want to do everything right, there are often a lot of misunderstandings. And
of course.
I have definitely had to throw out kitchen equipment because many years ago, Baruch Hashem now,
mm-hmm.
Everything's good. But, yeah, from making mistakes with kashrus and not understanding and I've said the wrong thing, and I don't know. I don't know how much I really want to share, but, you know, it's a learning process, and life is a learning process, and Rebbe Nachman
the whole of a person's life is a learning process.
That's right. And Rebbe Nachman,
the moment we stop learning, we stop living.
That's right. You have to.
And not
all
lessons are necessarily pleasant.
That's right. That's right. And you have to, you can't get old. You must start over and over again. And one of the things that gives me great comfort is when the Rebbe says that he himself started over again and over again, sometimes, not only every day, sometimes several times per day. And this gives you the chizuk, it gives you the strength to say, okay, I messed up, I'm not perfect, I said the wrong thing, I did the wrong thing, but you know what? I get another chance, and I can do better next time, and I can improve, and I can work on myself.
The simple fact that one notices that he or she made a mistake, the simple fact that one admits having made a mistake is already a giant step forward.
That's true. That's true. That, you know what? It's true, because we all, you know, life is hard, and it's easy to feel frail and to be hard on yourself. And sometimes that takes the form of denial, where you just don't want to admit, because if God forbid you're less than perfect, does that mean you're no good at all? And, of course, that's not the way a Jew thinks. Because there's always some good, always.
Of course.
Frankly,
I believe that there is nobody other than full tzaddikim. There is nobody that perfect that there isn't some bad in them. There is nobody that bad that there isn't some good in them, other than a few monsters in history that we can name.
Right, which is right. I think you're right, Chaim. I think you're right. And I think that's, you know, it's a lesson for all of us, is to
absolutely
be tolerant. And, you know, Rebbe Nachman said that one of the things that people have, a lot of people need to work on their emunah, their faith in Hashem. But one of the things that people have that's equally or even more destructive is they don't have faith in themselves. They don't connect with the good inside themselves. They don't believe in the good inside themselves. And this is such a lesson for our times. You know, you hear about low self-esteem and people being depressed and down on themselves. And we need to take some joy in ourselves, too, and love ourselves. It's okay. You can love yourself. It's a good thing, as long as you're not an egomaniac, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Anyway.
And as long as you indulge yourself for a reason, for a higher end.
Right.
If one does all that just for one's own sake,
that
person is a horrible slave to the worst kind of monster.
That's right. That's right.
And we're just about out of time. Please tune us in next week, ladies and gentlemen, for a new edition of Black Talk Radio of the Kosher Scene. Good night, one and all. Thank you very much for listening.